you're very welcome back to another episode of Talks About Tech Weekly. This is Talks About Tech Weekly, episode 109 today, recorded on August 2nd, 2014. You're very welcome to the show. I'm your host, Michael McAndrew, and as always, I am joined by Mr. Kevin McAndrew in the studio today. Kevin, thank you very much for joining me for another episode of the show. How are you doing? I muted your microphone because I thought you'd be giving me some hassle here.
What do you mean?
With the microphone noises during the intro.
Oh, okay.
No, it's just because Kevin's using a desktop stand, which can cause quite a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Don't try to do that. So we're going to talk about lots of interesting stuff today. To start off with, we're going to be talking about Samsung. Their profits fell from a whopping... They basically fell 25%.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at the figures, I mean, it's down to their profits for quarter three. By the way, a lot of technology companies at the moment, they're bringing in their quarter three profits. 7.3 trillion won.
Yeah.
Which is about, you know, $7.03 billion, which is quite a lot. But it's down 25% from quarter three of last year, which is quite a lot.
Yeah.
So basically what we're going to talk about, Kevin, is why this happened. Why did this happen?
Well, I guess one of the biggest things is a decline in the market for tablets recently.
Well, yeah. I mean, now people would say, well, you know, it's a quiet time of year. No one's really buying stuff now. But the thing is, this is in comparison to quarter three of last year. Everything is in the decline. And I think one of the biggest things here is the decline in the tablet market. It's been seen that we're seeing a decline in tablet sales, mostly because what has happened now is tablets have become an unnecessary middle ground. And I think people just want to have one device that does pretty much everything. And that seems to be the smartphone. And the biggest reason why this is happening is because the smartphone is becoming bigger and it's in size, and it's becoming very, very similar in size to 7-inch tablets. I mean, there's 6-inch phones now.
Yeah.
Which have more than ample size displays for watching Netflix and basically doing whatever you need to do on the internet. Mm-hmm. So tablets are becoming less and less important and less useful for most people. And they kind of feel like, well, it's a bit of a waste of money, really, to invest in a tablet.
Because they don't need it.
Yeah. Now, the laptop sales have seen a little bit of growth, especially in Macs. Loads of people are buying Macs now. But mostly mobile phones really are the big kind of moneymaker still. But so, you see, what's happened is that the global, like, if we look at Samsung globally, I mean, Samsung are one of the biggest smartphone manufacturers in the world. And if you look at the history of Samsung, Samsung have basically been a company that has always copied what other companies have done in terms of smartphones and the mobile market. Samsung started off making copies of Nokia phones, Nokia feature phones. Nokia, you know, Symbian devices, as well as the beloved Blockias. What happened was when the iPhone came out, Samsung basically decided they were going to make the most powerful, cheapest knockoff of the iPhone they possibly could. And that's what Samsung do, is they just make copies of everything. The Samsung Galaxy S1 was an Android copy of the iPhone.
Yeah.
So what has happened now with Samsung is that their global smartphone market share has dropped from 32.3% to 25.2% in the last quarter. That's what their global smartphone market share was. To me, this seems like, I don't know what your opinion is on this, Kevin, but to me, it seems like this is proof of poor quality devices. The iPhone, in my opinion, is just so much better quality than any Samsung smartphone. HTC are making better quality smartphones that have metal construction and have better, far better build quality than the cheap plastic Samsung phones that are there at the moment.
Yeah.
I think this is why there has been such a downturn, along with some kind of dodgy marketing campaigns from Samsung as well.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing about Samsung phones is, well, for the hardware part anyway, yeah, they're definitely more plasticky than any other phone. Like, their top-of-the-range phones still are, the majority of them are plastic. Whereas if you look at other phones like, let's say, the HTC M8, like, that phone is immaculate. And that's one of their higher-end phones. And that is, like, all metal, like, very few plastics and really high-quality materials. However, with the majority of Samsung phones, it's very cheap materials, as you said. But for the internals of Samsung products, usually they're actually pretty good. You know, they have good specs. On paper, it looks good. You know, good camera,
well, okay.
Good processor, things
yeah,
like
that's,
that.
Yeah, that's what Samsung is known for, is, you know, having, like, really, really top specs.
Yeah.
For a really, really low price.
But I think, though, that the design of the phone doesn't really do it justice. If you have a phone that's not able to use those specifications, just let's say, for example, if you had an iPhone and you have one of the new Galaxies, right? And you know how they have, both of them have the fingerprint scanner now. But the thing about the iPhone is, you know, you can put your, let's say you use your thumb, you can put your thumb anywhere on that. Whereas with the Samsung phone, if you have to, like, swipe it in a certain direction and things like that. So they both have a fingerprint scanner. However, the iPhone's one is much nicer and much more usable than the Samsung one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. But I think you were getting close to something there, and that was that Samsung has always been high specs at low price and low cost.
Yeah.
But now what's happening is that Samsung phones, I mean, the Samsung Galaxy S5 is an extremely expensive phone. It's more expensive than an iPhone 5S, or just as expensive. And there are phones out there like the Nexus 5 and the OnePlus 1, as well as many handsets from Huawei and other upcoming Chinese manufacturers that are just simply providing the same kind and even better smartphone experiences for far less amount of money.
Yeah.
In fact, so they're so much cheaper that someone can go and buy the phone outright without having to go on a monthly contract for the same price that they could get a Samsung phone on contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's also the Samsung. So Samsung have been putting a lot of effort into marketing. But what I feel is like, I feel like Samsung Samsung, what they've done with their marketing is they've been trying to give the feel like they're just as good as Apple, but what they've actually done is in their ads just made people think that if you want people to think like your devices, think that your devices are like Apple devices, you've got to do an ad that's like Apple's ad. You don't see Apple digging into other companies in their ads purposefully. That's what Samsung is doing, and it's in their ads. They just start digging into Apple all the time. That's not good marketing strategy. That's not a good marketing strategy at all. That's going to make people hate you rather than like you. That tells people that you're not focused on your products. You're more focused about picking a fight with Apple and other companies, other competitors. So that was a big downfall. And as a result, what marketing does is it gives people an impression of a company. And what it's done for me, at least, is it's given me the opinion that Samsung are quite a cheap kind of a phone manufacturer. They make very cheap devices at a very high cost. And that's kind of their downfall, is that now they just have so many competitors out there. TouchWiz is not a very good skin, and it has gotten a huge reputation for being extremely bloated and containing a lot of bloated software.
Yeah. Even with those amazing processors and things, you'd think it would run very nicely. Even running, like, if it's running the latest Android software, but because it's so heavily skinned, it doesn't look anything really like Android. It's kind of like having its own kind of software. Like, there is very little in common between the two, between just normal stock Android and TouchWiz.
Yeah, so a lot of investors are quite worried about this, Kevin. What do you think Samsung has to do?
Well, I think that Samsung are asking a bit too much for the price of their phones and the build quality. And I think if they just bring up their build quality at least a bit and start using higher quality materials and things like that, I think it really would do them justice. Now, Samsung aren't exactly known for that thing, so I'm not sure that they'll go down that route.
Well, I'll tell you, when I ask people about, if I ask someone who wouldn't be very technical what phone they have, and if the phone that they have is a Samsung, they say, oh, well, I have this crappy Samsung. That's literally what they say.
Yeah.
And when they first get the phone, it's like, oh, I got this new phone. It's like a Samsung Galaxy S. Yeah. And then after a while, they start saying, yeah, I have this crappy Samsung thing. I want an iPhone. That is basically what they say.
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone who's not technical who says, oh, yeah, I got this crappy iPhone. It's an interesting thing. I'm not saying that Samsung phones are crap or whatever, but I'm just saying that that's kind of a feedback that I've gotten from people who aren't technical.
Yeah.
A lot of that is down to bugs on Android that just aren't as polished. That won't make it as polished, because what can happen a lot of the time is phones get slower as they get older.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the biggest things that's happening.
Especially with such a skinned version of Android.
Yeah. Yeah, and TouchWiz is so bloated anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that Samsung definitely, and a lot of analysts have been saying, look, Samsung need to get their act together and stop making plastic devices and start making higher-end metal-constructed devices. I don't even think they need to do that. I think they need to make something like, I mean, if you look at the Motorola Moto X and Moto G phones, and then they have a new, I think it's Moto E? E or F? I don't know. They've got so many letters, I don't know. But they have one that's they have a new kind of an entry-level phone that is the same. They're all made out of plastic, but they're super high quality.
Yeah. Like if you look at
yeah, it's the Moto E.
Yeah.
Really, really cheap phone. Really, really nice. Or not the Moto E. Sorry. That's different, I think, is it? Let me see.
Well, if you look at my phone, I've had my phone for a year now. It's kind of weird to think that. But if you look at it, if you look at the back, you know, you can't really see any scratches or anything like that, yeah. You know? Like, it's a pretty high-quality plastic. Now, I do have, like, one nick on the side, and there's another one up at the top right corner.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's pretty much it. You know, it's pretty... what I really like about the Motorola design is that they have very small bezels around the edge of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so although it mightn't look as big as other phone or other screens, it is actually really big because the phone is nice and small. You have a big screen, and also it just fits really, really nice in your hand.
Yeah. And that's what makes it a good quality phone. I think Samsung don't really have that with their phones. Not anymore. At least. I think that the quality just isn't there. So I think that's what they need to do, really, is just do that. All right, let's talk about Beats being bought by Apple. Now, we all know that Beats were bought by Apple.
Yep.
Well, it's kind of official now.
It's officially official.
Yeah.
That it's official.
Yeah. So now if you go to the Beats, basically they did an overhaul of their site or whatever, but now when you go to the Beats store and you want to buy a Beats product, there's a button there that says buy on the Apple store. That's the way you buy it now, is through the Apple store. So
yeah.
That's basically Beats. If you go to beatsbydre.com, they've got a nice new website, and if I want to go buy like these studio headphones, which are a phenomenal €299.95, I can go and buy them on the Apple Store. That is incredibly expensive. But yeah, it just brings you to the Apple Store so you can buy them, if you're mad. So, kind of interesting how Apple are now selling Beats. You know, I think this is actually doing a little bit more harm to Apple's brand than good, at least for me. Because Apple believe, apparently, that Beats make from their... They put out a welcome Beats kind of a message on their site that basically said, "Today we are excited to officially welcome Beats Music and Beats Electronics to the Apple family. Music has always held a special place in our hearts, and we're thrilled to join forces with a group of people who love it as much as we do." Beats co-founders Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre have created beautiful products and have helped millions of people deepen their connection to music. We're delighted to be working with the team to elevate that experience even further. And we can't wait to hear what's next. So, you know, Apple, they're kind of saying, oh, Beats are good. But a lot of people, you know, anyone who knows anything about headphones know that Beats are extremely overpriced.
Okay.
Headphones.
Well, I'd just like to say, mm-hmm. if you think about it like this, right? Apple devices are really nice, but they're also very expensive. Now,
yes.
Now,
But are they overpriced?
Yes, that's the thing. But with Beats, it's a really... If you look at the design of it, it's a really nice design. They're really comfortable.
Are they?
But they are. They look nice, don't they? Like, they don't look like something that you buy for €20
They're a premium brand. That's what you're trying to say. Yeah.
But I think the reason that they're so successful is because... It's a cultural thing now. It's like, do you know what? I'm getting Beats. You know, they're like really good. And they're like, because they're so expensive, they're like really good. And, you know, they're supported by this guy called he has a doctor before his name. Like, who wouldn't believe in a person who has doctor before their name, you know? It's just, you know, it's brilliant. So the majority of stuff that you're paying for is actually the brand, not the technology. Now, they are very bassy headphones.
They're muddy. That's just the way they are. They have no definition and no... Yeah. See, I like headphones that have a lot of high end because it gives clarity to what you're listening to. So you can hear the details. I don't like bass at all. And, you know, I actually, the headphones, if you're wondering, the headphones I use every single day to do everything, and I am a huge audio snob.
Audiophile.
I am someone who absolutely obsesses about audio quality, and because, you know, I'm a podcaster, so that's what I do. I want to make sure that my audio quality is perfect, but I'm also, I do a lot of music production, I record songs and whatever, so... For me, you know, I don't have studio monitors here.
Yeah.
Which is something I definitely want to get in the future, but unfortunately I don't have studio monitors. So I have to mix on headphones, and I use Bose AE2 headphones. Now, I know everyone who knows anything about headphones has an opinion about Bose, that, you know, Bose are quite similar to Beats, where they're a big brand, it's all about the brand, the quality of the headphones are terrible in terms of, I mean, they're extremely comfortable, but the sound quality is not very good. Well, that was the case up until the AE2s came around.
Yes.
When the AE2s came around, Bose actually started making a good sounding headphone. I have to say, they've gotten rid of all that bass. These are extremely not bassy headphones. I mean, actually, they have no bass in them, basically. Like,
I think,
great for me.
I think Bose now, like in the past, they might have been known for a lot of bass. Now, they're not known for bass. These things are not bassy. They're more acoustic than anything.
And unfortunately for Bose, now that they've actually started creating a headphone that is really, really, that sounds really good, people still have the opinion, like professional audio guys still have the opinion of Bose that they are very, very bassy and not, they lack definition. I have to say these headphones are incredibly good and they're extremely comfortable, but they sound, I mean, they sound really good.
Yeah.
You can get the AE2s now for about €120 if you're interested. Yeah.
When we got them, I think one of the best investments I've ever had in audio, at least, are these headphones, because we both got them at the same time, the same day, same store, but we paid €150 for them, and we thought, you know, maybe it mightn't be that good of an investment, but sure, we'll go along with it. We've had them for 3 years now. Still, the connectors are really good quality, headphones really comfortable, you know, so some people who say that Bose headphones are not good,
they would have been right.
Yes, but with these headphones, they are absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Now, another thing about Bose is that if you look at the advertising for Bose, right, and then if you look at the advertising for Beats, so you have some guy who is doctor before his name, and he's a rapper, like he's a really, really cool guy, and then you look at Bose, and then it's like some guy in a plane or something, or some model or something in their ads. You know, they don't have someone who's memorable. So they're not going to be as successful. Even though they are a huge brand, Bose are definitely not as successful as Beats.
Mm. Yeah, what I would say now is I probably wouldn't recommend the Bose AE2s. But I will say, I mean, I would probably recommend the headphones I would recommend now would probably be AKG K240s.
Yeah.
For studio. But for everyday stuff, I think if comfort is a big thing for you, definitely the Bose A2s.
Yeah. Like, they're not a bad headphone. They're good. Like,
oh no, they're far from bad. They are good headphones, yeah. I have to say. The sound If you're a fan of bass, they're not good headphones. they are really, really good headphones.
Yeah.
They are quite similar sounding to like the Audio-Technica M50s, in my opinion. Quite similar sounding. The M50s are more expensive at this stage, I think. And they're a little bit less comfortable.
Yeah.
I think the M50s are a little bit more neutral sounding, in my opinion. But if comfort is a big thing and you still want good sound quality, these would be my recommendations.
Yeah.
But my next set of headphones will be AKG K240s.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about an update of the Right to be Forgotten. So we talked about this a few weeks ago on the show about the Right to be Forgotten. Basically, it's a something that the European kind of parliament has decided to do. And basically,
it's a new law, pretty much.
It's a new law.
European law.
Where search engines are required to give people the option for information to be removed from their indexing. And so Google were the first of the search engines to do this. I think Bing is doing it now, and probably Yahoo is in the process of doing it. But
the rest are going to follow then.
Yeah, but there has been a lot of controversy over it, if you haven't been following the story. Basically, a lot of there were no kind of guidelines given to what is adequate, an adequate reason for a link to be removed from Google or one of these search engines. So Google have no real way to be able to figure out which links should be removed and which links shouldn't be removed. So what has happened now is, you know, a lot of criminals are trying to get records on Google removed about them and stuff like that. Criminal record stuff, bad press about them. I mean, like there's a lot of stuff going on now with journalists where journalists who do not work at a particular publication are trying to get articles that they've written removed from search engines from maybe a past a publication that they worked for.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff going on here, but basically there's a new update where Google released a letter in a public Google Doc, which is quite interesting. And basically in this letter, they were writing a letter to, let me see, it's just loading here, loading very slowly. Obviously a lot of people want to view this, but I think they were writing to someone in the EU Parliament about this. Basically they said that they wanted to, in the letter, they were going to make all of this information that they were discussing public, which they did. And basically in the letter, they say that there's some very interesting information about this. Over 91,000 submissions to date.
Whoa.
So 91,000 people.
It's a lot of people.
Over 328,000 links were asked to be removed.
It's a lot of links.
So 91,000 people and 328,000 links. So that means that most people were asking for more than one link to be removed. Also, just over half of the requested links have been removed. That's what is believed at the moment.
Crazy.
So, yeah. So about 40% of the links have not been removed.
Yeah.
Out of those 328,000. Now, most people have reason to believe that most of these requests haven't even been processed yet.
Yeah.
So,
but if you think about that, that's a lot of links. Because if you search something up and you're looking for a very specific bit of information on Google or Bing or any other search engine, because they're all at one stage going to have to bring this in.
Mm.
You're not going to get what you're looking for. And they're restricting what you can search on the internet. You know?
Hmm.
Like, obviously, if you know the URL, you can type it in. But otherwise, if you're on a search engine, it's very, very difficult to find that.
Yep. So if we look at a breakdown of the main, some of the major countries in the EU, about 17,500 requests have for links to be removed on Google have been made under French law, mm-hmm. which involving around 58,000 URLs. About 16,500 requests have been made under German law, involving around 57,000 URLs. 12,000 requests have been made under UK law, involving around 44,000 URLs. So that's kind of interesting. And a lot of these statistics actually, I believe, reflect culture as well.
Yes.
As in people's, what they feel about protection of privacy.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cultures where people are, kind of very aware of privacy, obviously there's going to be more requests for this.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an interesting one. 8,000 requests under Spanish law. So quite a lot less than any of the other countries we've been talking about, involving about 27,000 URLs. 7,500 requests have been made under Italian law, involving around 28,000 URLs. And Dutch law, 5,500 requests, involving about 21,000 URLs. So it's very interesting. Now, what I want to do right now, Kevin, is actually go to the Right to be Forgotten page and go through it. So if I wanted to remove a URL right now, I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Now, I'm not actually going to, because I don't have any URL in particular that I want to remove. I'm on the page right now, and it says search removal request under data protection law in Europe.
There's a bit of background there.
And then it says, please select the country whose laws apply to your request. So for me, it is
Ireland.
Ireland. Then it asks me to fill out some personal information. So I'm actually not going to fill this out, because they're probably looking at this right now, Google. Personal information, name used to search. So the full name for which you are requesting search results to be removed. So for me, it would be Michael McAndrew. Full name of requester. So your own name if you are requesting somebody else. If you're sending a request for someone else, you must have the legal authority to act on their behalf. If you are submitting this request on behalf of someone else, please specify your relationship to that person, for example, parent or solicitor, okay?
Yeah.
So just ask you to fill out that kind of stuff, a contact email address, okay? Then after that, it asks search results that you want to be removed from the list of results produced when searching for a name. So it says, for us to evaluate your request, you must identify each result in the list of results that you want to be removed, providing the URL, explain why the linked web page is about you, and mm-hmm. for each URL, explain why the inclusion of the URL as a search result is irrelevant. Okay? So it says URLs for requests that you want to be removed, and you can add
as many as you want, pretty much.
Let me see how many you can add. How many options? Yeah, pretty much as many as you want. So you can add loads of different URLs to that.
Whoa.
So then,
if you wanted to spam, though.
Yeah, that could be a thing as well. But then you have a box below here that gives you 1,000 words to write about why these links should be removed from Google. And then it asks you for an ID, okay? So it says, please attach a legible copy of a document that verifies your identity. So it could be anything. So a passport. It could be a document like a bank statement or something like that, just to prove that you are who you are. And then you just have to tick to confirm that you are, that you represent the information in this request and that it is accurate and all that kind of stuff. And then you just put in a signature by typing your full name and put in the date that you submitted it. And that is it.
I mean, submit.
So you could do that in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, as long as you know the links that you want to get rid of and
well, obviously, you would know that beforehand. But to fill out the form, it takes about five minutes to do. So, I mean, they don't lecture you or anything about why you want to remove a link. It is extremely easy to do. And then Google will simply review that.
Yeah. Now, it's very difficult to make a moral decision because you can't use... can't exactly use computers to go through all these things. Because,
no, you have to use human beings.
Yeah, because computers can't make moral decisions. Now, there are, I guess, if there are some keywords they can pick out and stuff like that, but it's very difficult to do. So you have to use human beings, right? So if you have like 90,000 requests, could you imagine? Like, if you'd have to have a lot of people to go through all those requests and make good decisions on them. So they're, like the majority of those requests probably haven't even been reviewed yet. And a lot of them probably are not a lot of them, but a good few of them might be spam or, you know, just people. And, it's just completely ludicrous. Like, it doesn't make any sense why you'd want to do that. So it's kind of a bit of a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Putting in a request, but you have to still go through those ones. So it's very difficult to go through that number of requests.
Yeah. So we will probably continue to keep you up to date on the Right to be Forgotten Act in the future, but that's pretty much the update there. I think that this act is definitely going to see a few more revisions in the very near future.
It has to be. It kind of has to.
And I think Google is making officials in the European Parliament quite aware of that.
Yep.
And, So, Kevin, let's talk about your Canon T3i/600D.
Yeah. So, during the week... The week.
Oops.
During the week...
Smash my mic there.
During the week, for about the last month, I've been looking around trying to find the best price for...
It wasn't like you just did this and overnight.
Yeah, for the T3i /600D. So over in America, it's T3i, and over here in Europe, it's 600D. And usually, I think the retail price is about 500.
Did you say in America it's the 600D?
No.
Okay, sorry.
In America, it's T3i.
Yeah.
I think the recommended retail price is about €500 to €600.
Yeah.
For the body itself. Now, it is a DSLR. You can swap out all the lenses, just
which
like any other DSLR.
Brilliant, if you ask me.
And it has a flip-out screen and loads of other stuff.
Flip-out screen.
So it's a pretty good camera, but I've been looking for the best price. Now, over in America, I think you can get it for about $290, which is even less in euro. So that's a really good price. It's a lot of money off it. However, you can't exactly get it in Ireland. It's kind of difficult to get it. If you want to get it in Ireland online, it's very difficult. So usually we'd have to go over to England or someplace like that. So, or Europe, because if you get something from America, if you order something from America in Ireland, the amount that you have to pay, not just for shipping, you have to pay a lot for shipping, but for duty and all that coming in for the product coming into the country is absolutely phenomenal. And you can really get ripped off in some cases.
Mm.
So to play it safe, you want to get it from someplace in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know that the deal on that on the T3i was like some it was because it was like a holiday in the US.
Yeah.
Memorial Day or one of those. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the holidays in
It was one of them anyway.
But yeah, that was a special deal. That's actually $500 on Amazon.com to buy the camera. But can I just explain why we actually got the T3i of all cameras?
Sure.
Because the T3i is a discontinued camera.
Yeah.
They don't make it anymore. It was replaced by the T4i and now the T5i.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why we bought it was because it's the best bang for the buck. The T4i has a few improvements on the T3i, but it's actually pretty much the same sensor. A few different changes. And it's the same with the T5i. It's just a kind of an evolutionary kind of a progression.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the price of those are quite expensive. And because it's a discontinued camera, we could get a very good deal on the camera. So what we are looking to use it for is actually video. Because I don't know if you're aware of this, but DSLRs are extremely good for video.
Yeah.
Not just photography, but also videography and cinematography. Because they have a very large sensor and they have interchangeable lenses. And because they have a large sensor, it gives a great depth of field. And it's a very similar feel, look and feel to that of 30 millimeter film. And the T3i actually has an option to record at 24 frames per second, which is what is used in film.
Yeah.
So DSLRs have a very film-like look to them in terms of depth of field, in terms of color, and you can do a lot with DSLRs, and they've become extremely popular. DSLRs have in recent times to be used for video. So we got it because we want to do some video. And I must say, it's pretty nice. Anyway.
It is.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Kevin, on your talk. I just wanted to make that clear about why we decided to get this camera out of all of the other options of DSLRs that are out there. Because there's some great Nikon cameras as well as Canon cameras. And you can actually put on the Magic Lantern software on that as well.
Yep.
Through the SD card. But we'll talk about that probably in another episode because we haven't done that yet with the camera. But we do plan on doing that.
Yeah. So it is really a very versatile camera. And we didn't get any lenses for it. Like, we didn't buy any specifically for this. But before this camera, we've had... Which one's the...
Pentax.
And we've had... is it a Fujifilm?
Oh, yeah.
Now, with that one, you can't actually...
That was a bridge camera.
Yeah, so you can't take off the lenses or anything like that. And the majority of the settings are all kind of like autofocus and things. So we thought it'd be really nice to get a DSLR because if you want to do some nice manual stuff and change out the lenses, get different looks, it would be much nicer. So we got this, and before we did have an SLR, so we do have lenses.
Great lenses. We have a 28 to 105 and 100 to 200 mil.
So that covers a lot.
That covers... now, the 28 to 105 mil zoom lens that we have, it's not very good for a very wide angle. It's quite a narrow angle kind of a lens, but it's quite a versatile lens because you can zoom in quite a lot. And it also goes to an aperture of f4, I believe.
Yes,
and it goes down to, what does it say there? Aperture, was it F22?
Yeah, F22.
And I think that the 100 to 200 mil lens is pretty much very, very similar as well. And that's a really, really big zoom lens, which is really cool. So where the 28 to 105 mil lens kind of stops, the 100 to 200 mil lens takes off.
Mm-hmm.
So we got an adapter because Canon lenses take a special kind of an EF mount. And we needed an EF mount to K-mount adapter because that's what Pentax lenses take. And it works perfectly except for autofocus.
Yeah, you can't use autofocus or... That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Just autofocus.
Yeah, just autofocus.
And also aperture.
Yeah.
The aperture is a manual ring because it's such a, they're really old lenses. On all modern lenses, their aperture is controlled from the body of the camera. But on this, it's an actual aperture ring, which is kind of funny, but yeah.
Blast from the past.
Blast from the past. But they're really good lenses. Really, they're
very high quality.
Very, very high quality glass. And they also have a very good depth of field as well, especially when you zoom in.
Yeah, yeah. So, actually today I was taking some videos of...
That stuff looked great. And that was just like on the fly.
Like, you see, we're building a bottle boat at the moment. And I wanted to... I'm probably going to make a video of how we made it and stuff and put it up on YouTube or whatever. But one of the things that we were doing was we're filling a bottle with expanding foam. Don't ask why, but we were...
As you do.
And it's not exactly something you can film after the fact when the boat is all finished and things. So I wanted to get a video of it today. And it's not like some amateur video or something. Like, I literally just took out the camera and started shooting, and it looks just brilliant.
Yeah, now that was in really good lighting and everything. It looks like an actual, it looks like 30mm film camera.
It does, yeah.
Basically, that's what the kind of look that it gives you. But it's also great for low light because the sensor is massive. And if you get a, especially with a lens but that does higher apertures or lower apertures, you can manually control ISO so you can keep the noise low.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean... Okay, so ISO starts the noise starts coming up at about 1,000. That's when it starts becoming noticeable. But you can control it. You can bring it down, bring up the aperture, bring up different kind of things to keep the noise down. And that's what's really useful about a DSLR, is that really great for low light situations where you don't have ample lighting, because you can manually control the settings, keep the ISO down and keep the noise down.
It's just like the camera on my phone. It's a lovely camera when it's really nice and sharp. It brings out the colors and everything like that in daylight. Mm-hmm. And if it's good daylight. But if you have, if you're just sitting down taking a video and it's kind of at dusk, it looks terrible. It looks so noisy and just disgusting and awful in every single way that a camera can look. And that's, with the DSLR, it would look still nice and crisp and everything like that. But it is a phone camera or a phone camera. But, it looks absolutely disgusting. And that's why you need, messing around with it there. That's why you need a good exposure and ISO and be able to control all those things manually. If you're working, let's say daylight is running low and you're doing a film shoot for a sketch or something like that, and instead of coming back for a second day, you can go ahead and shoot that scene that you want to shoot, even if the light is going down. And you can compensate for that with color correction and color grading and things like that afterwards. But yeah,
I'm just messing around with this here.
It's a really nice camera, though. It's very nice quality, and we only charged it up once, didn't we? Pretty much.
Pretty much
for a bit now. But I've been testing it out with the photos and stuff like that, and it's
pretty sweet.
Standing up for the test. Yeah, it's good to have a DSLR now. So if we want to do any shoots or anything like that, just to take out the DSLR and get really nice quality. Now, I think the next thing I have to get is probably a good tripod.
Mm.
Now, you can get really cheap tripods, and you have to be careful when you're getting them. But I'd say I'll have to invest into a good one instead of just getting a cheap 10 euro one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So speaking of lighting, as we were doing earlier on there about how important lighting is for a camera, I've been working on a DIY LED lighting solution.
And it's looking very nice already.
Yeah. Well, I haven't done anything, really. Basically, the idea is that I wanted to be able to make a DIY. I mean, there's so many DIY LED lighting videos that are out there.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because LED, professional LED lighting at the moment is quite expensive. I mean, you could be paying 400 euro for just 150 to 300 LED light. So I wanted to do something that would provide loads and loads of light for extremely cheap. So I went on amazon.co.uk and I bought 28 for £28 10 meters worth of LED strips that have three LEDs in them, red, green and blue for mixing colors and whatever. It has a remote control so you can control the colors. And
so if you wanted to,
it's just basically
change the, like, you could have like tungsten light and then like normal daylight and things. You could change the color. It'd be really cool. But anyway, sorry. Yeah.
So basically, you can change colors on. It's got a remote and it's got sticky kind of adhesive on the back of it. So you can stick it to a surface. So what I did actually was I bought a metal picture frame.
Yeah.
And I just, basically what I'm doing now, I'm in the process of making it still because I've had to do so much soldering because there's 24 strips, LED strips, and I've had to cut the roll of LEDs into strips and then solder wiring to each one of the ends of them.
Four wires in each end.
And they're extremely finicky because the contacts are so close to each other. But basically what I'm going to be doing is sticking them to the, you know, the kind of wooden cardboard-ish kind of back of the picture frame.
OSB.
But it will look, I mean, I'll paint it black. I mean, it'll look like a professional lighting, a lighting panel, and should be able to give us a lot of light, plenty of light that we need. So it should be good. So I'll probably put up a video on YouTube about it. But I'm still in the process of making it at the moment. But yeah, it looks pretty promising. Yeah. There's a few things I'm a little bit worried about, and that's because in order to get white, the color white, it just turns on all three of the LEDs. So it turns on the red, green, and blue LEDs. So it depends on what kind of camera. Is there, you know, that what kind of camera we're using, it might just pick up on one color or the other, you know? So, but we'll find out. I mean, it should be okay. But it's a test more than anything, really. But it should be good. It should work quite well.
You got most of them done. Hang on a sec. You got most of them done so far anyway. There's only a few left to do.
Oh no, your microphone is going.
It's gone now.
Yeah, but I'm nearly done. I should be done tomorrow. I should have it finished, but it's going well. And I will be putting up a review of the these new in-ear monitors that I got. They're called ME Electronics M6 earphones, and I've ordered another two pairs. They should be coming quite soon.
Yep.
I'm not sure why they take a while to ship, I think, but I've ordered one for you, Kevin, and one for Dad as well.
Yeah. You see, we like to play music, and
there's something up with your microphone.
Like to play. Is it good now? Is it?
No.
No.
It's very low.
Will I just plug it out, or?
Just keep talking.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be okay.
If I just go nice and close, it'll be good.
It should be fine.
Michael, flip. We like to play, flip sake. There we go.
There we go.
Okay. So we like to play, a good bit of music, and I play the drums, which are very loud. So, like, we tried different things, different, ear protection. But the thing about that is that you can't actually hear the instruments. You know, you're protecting your ears, but you can't really hear it very well. So the great thing about in-ear monitors is that you can block out all that noise and you can protect your ears. And at the same time, you can also listen to the music and can listen to it in its best quality instead of kind of this muffled quality. So you actually know what you're playing then, instead of just kind of going with it and not really knowing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really handy for that.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, so you can like plug them in and, you know, obviously get very, you know, monitor and everything, and the noise rejection is fantastic. So
yep.
I'll be putting a review out of that as well. Some of the footage for that review will be filmed on the Canon camera, but some of it will also be filmed on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff I've already done, but I'm just going to wait till Kevin gets a tripod, because I've been trying to do it with microphone stands and it's not really working. It's quite awkward. So
yeah,
I'm just going to wait till we get the tripod to do the rest of the stuff. But I've put out a review this week of the Superlux microphone that I am now using, of course. So if you want to check that out, you can go over to the YouTube channel at talksabouttech.com.
All done on the
iPhone. Or actually, youtube.com/talksabouttech.
Yeah,
that was all done using the iPhone. All of that footage was done using the iPhone.
Pretty crazy.
It looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Obviously, the lighting was pretty good. Had to be pretty good to do that. I mean, the iPhone does not work good in low lighting situations.
Yeah.
So, I think that pretty much wraps it up for this week's episode of Talks About Tech Weekly. Nothing else I wanted to cover this week. I hope you enjoyed the interview last week with Harry McCam, very interesting guy, so he is. And Kev, yeah, thanks very much for joining me. Where can people follow you on the internet?
You can follow me and McAndrew Kev on Twitter.
Yeah. Check out the website, talksabouttech.com. I always put up show notes along with every episode, so you can check that out for this episode, talksabouttech.com/TATweekly/109. That's crazy, 109 episodes. Follow me on Twitter, talksabouttech1 is my Twitter account. Email me, michael@talksabouttech.com. So thank you very much for tuning into this episode of Talks About Tech Weekly. We'll see you in the next episode. Thanks for listening.